Psst! It's me, Podbods, Ben Shires, ushering you into the last of our Dave's Leicester Comedy Festival podcast specials. Yep, that's a bit of a mouthful, allegedly like our next fantastical and most florid of guests. Yep, we've pulled out all the stops, although, to be honest, there weren't that many to begin with, to bring you show favourite, part man, part bird, all Paul Foot. Due to some unusual timing issues, Paul was in the process of checking out of his hotel as we caught up with him, but was still able to give us a dynamic overview of his now thriving fruit and veg import slash export business. And if he was looking to expand into the emerging Bulgarian market, Tom Rosenthal would be the man to talk to. The star of Friday Night Dinner has written a whole bleeding show about the place, and like the best of us, seems to be mildly obsessed with fictional surfing too. Finally, the myth and legend that is Tony Law met us at a karaoke venue in Highbury to discuss his Stalinist ambitions, his Osmond-like brood, and the shows in Leicester that he'd already done, but we had to catch up with him later, which is why we're in London and not Leicester. Make sense? Well, if it all sounds a bit surreal, that's because it is. Welcome to what happens at the tail end of a comedy festival, my friends. Okay, it's the Dave Weekly with friend of the show returning after a year's absence, Paul Foot.
Greetings. Hello.
Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Are you all right?
Yeah. Very good. Very good. So it's already been Calamity Central here at a certain branded hotel in Leicester.
Well, we were doing the interview just minutes before my train back to London, and we got locked out of my room, and I had to give security to a lady by telling her there was a suitcase with a monkey on it. And that's what allowed us back into the room. But she was very strict. She said, we've only got 12 minutes to do this podcast or else she's going to be in big trouble. We're going to be in big trouble with grown-ups.
Or else the monkey gets it. I think that was her implied tone, wasn't it?
Well, she is the sort of woman who would think nothing of getting a monkey case and kicking it in.
I know those kind of people. I mean, there's a certain comedian who endorses these hotels, and I'm not sure that he would stand for that attitude.
I'm not sure that he would stay at the hotel.
I'm not sure he would either. I think there's a certain tagline which he would not abide, something about everything being premier. I've noticed that lots of things are sub-premier here.
I like the hotel. It's nice and warm, nice and clean and pleasant. Whereas sometimes you stay at those all posh ones and there's all goings on and it's all disgusting. And it's all like you go in and it's like an 18th century foyer, all grand and Victorian. That's 19th century, really. But then when you go in, it's all a bit grim and everything's falling apart and dilapidated. This is nice. It's clean.
Yeah, well, I think it's functional. I remember when we spoke last time, it was Leicester Festival last year, and you were saying how disappointed you were that you didn't have a bath, and now you switched.
I have a bath. In this hotel, I have a bath. There we are, you see, he's got everything I need. You say functional, and you say it in a very dismissive way. Functional? Well, name something that in this hotel room that I haven't got that I would need.
A settee?
Why would I need a settee? I mean, the thing is, you go into a posh hotel room and there's a settee, but no one ever sits on it. And you always think, oh, we never sat on a chaise longue. And also, I never poked my nose into that potpourri. And also, that special hand cream, I never opened that one. Oh, let's take it with us. It's all included. Then you take the hand cream with you and you never use it. Name something in the room that I would need that I haven't got.
A fridge?
Why would I need a fridge?
Oh, I think general refrigeration needs.
Just turn the air conditioning down and all your items will be to the correct temperature. Or run a cold bath and put all your groceries in there. I mean, obviously, I admit, there is no fridge in this room, and that does make it more difficult to run an import-export grocery business from the room. Sometimes suppliers do say to me, look, you haven't got the fresh produce. We're going elsewhere. We're going to someone who's staying at the different hotel who's stocked up with a load of lemons and stuff in their minibar. But as a general rule, if you're not running an import-export grocery business, this is a good room.
Well, I mean, I'm glad that we've managed to single down what purposes it can actually fulfil. Yeah. I think for your needs, then, it kind of does the job.
Well, absolutely. It's got everything I need. It's got a desk. I can write things. It's got people knocking on the door every 5 minutes.
So one thing that this leads on to nicely is that I noticed recently on Facebook, you've got quite an active Facebook involvement. You engage a lot with your connoisseurs.
Yes, yes.
And recently you put out a call for someone to be your assistant.
Oh, yes.
Now, I noticed quite soon after that you had to put out another message clarifying that that was a genuine announcement.
Oh, yes.
And not just one of your flights of fancy. Did you find that said assistant?
All sorted out. The thing about these things is that people never take it seriously. Like the other day, this lady said to me, "How do you know Aaron, who was at the show with me?" And I said, "Well, he works for me." And then she said, "How did you find him?" And I said, "From Facebook and Twitter and whatso." And then she said, "Did you have many people who applied?" I said, "Yes." And then she said, "How did you interview all of them?" I said, "No, I just obviously whittled them down, interviewed a short list and then chose someone for the job, just like any other business." She said, "Oh, I didn't think it would be like any other business. I thought we'll all be mad and you just interview everyone, like in some sort of ski centre or something."
A Willy Wonka-esque kind of trial.
Yes, people don't realise that I am a show businessman. I'm a businessman. That's why I have my briefcase, because I'm a businessman and I have business to do, including interviewing people and other things that any other business would do, such as getting onto the accountant and having a right go.
So, I mean, if you needed a new tagline, Paul, it could be "Paul Foot puts the business back in show business."
Well, yes, that I have been trying to think of that for months now, and now you've come up with it. The business. Yeah, because normally people would say, "Put the show into show business," but I've put the business back into show business.
It's a refreshing take on an otherwise tired genre. No wonder things are so successful at the moment.
Yeah, I'd see myself as more on the businessman end.
Mm. Yeah. And talking about success, you're going back to Australia soon.
Oh, yes,
and
yes.
And that's a country that loves you. They keep giving you nominations for all sorts of their top awards.
Class 420 visa.
Is that a good thing?
Yeah, it's good. That's a good visa to have.
Yeah, as visas go.
That's an entertainment visa for Australia.
Oh, is that when you have to prove you're an alien of special ability or something like that?
That's more when you go to America.
Oh, okay.
Well, you do have to. When you go to America, you have a class one visa, alien of extraordinary ability for America. But for Australia, you just have to prove that you're not going to bring any plants or maybe an apple or piece of pepperami that could kill Australia if you were to bring that into Australia. So you just have to prove you haven't got that. Then you get your visa.
So none of your room temperature peppers will make it over then?
Well, no. That's the import-export business. It's very much on hold when I'm out in Australia. But of course, when I did an advertisement in Australia for the Virgin Mobile, then they did have to prove that there was no one in Australia who could wear red tights and put on a ridiculous accent that was sort of part English, part French, part no one quite knows, and talk absolute nonsense. And they proved that no one could do it from Australia, so I got the job.
Well, what, there's no one else in Australia capable of doing that? That's quite good for you as the businessman of showbiz.
Well, it's excellent. Indeed, sometimes when I had radio adverts and they maybe couldn't afford me, they got an Australian person to pretend to be me doing the radio advert, but it wasn't very successful. They didn't manage to be like me. It was a failure.
That's when you know you've made it, Paul, when people are impersonating you, surely.
Well, yes, one of my aims in life is actually to become so successful as a comedian that I spawn a lot of Paul Foot tribute acts, Paul Foot impersonation acts. Then I will fake my own death for tax reasons. Then I will come back, but as a Paul Foot impersonator. But my aim is that in a sort of bizarre twist of events, I will be not the most successful Paul Foot impersonator. In fact, I'll be maybe like fifth or sixth on the list. So that after they've called the others, I'll be sort of like one of the backup ones if they haven't got their first choices. And then, so And I'll be quite bitter towards the other Paul Foot impersonators because they'll be earning much more money than me. And indeed, I will end up being both a recipient and a sort of a beneficiary of my own success, but also a victim of my own success.
Very much a victim of it, because so many people will be cleaning up on the lucrative Paul Foot impersonation circuit at that point, probably having taken over your lucrative business, grocery business as well.
Well, yes. I will be forced to put more time and effort into the import-export. That's been my main thing. I'll be mainly dealing out of the back of a van various bits of old peppers and carrots and stuff, whilst occasionally doing the Paul Foot tribute act. And I'd sometimes get drunk and go into pubs and say, I am Paul Foot, I used to be the real Paul Foot. And then people say, don't be silly. And I'd end up my days in a bedsit weeping with hardly any money, but knowing that I am the real Paul Foot, but no one believes me. And even my former staff members now work for the Paul Foot tribute people, and they won't even speak to me.
The tragedy of Paul Foot. Well, on that happy note, Paul, I think you've got a train to catch.
Oh, yes, that's right. I have. Good to go on a train. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Bye for now.
Goodbye.
That was Paul Foot. And, of course, if you want to place any orders, do contact him directly over the website. Now here's Tom Rosenthal speaking about what might happen if he weren't here next time you saw him. Okay, we're in Leicester with Tom Rosenthal. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm a bit hungover, to be honest. But, you know, I'm in Leicester.
Yay. Yeah, well, exactly. And it's that cautious optimism which I'm hoping will lead us into a very pleasant chat.
I am hoping that as well.
This afternoon. So, you performed last night.
Yes.
And you're here all day waiting for your next show.
Basically, yeah. I was just planning on sitting in the Ramada and writing all the bits that were bad yesterday and all the bits that were average, and then, you know, just trying to fix them for the lovely people of Leicester tonight, basically. What I'm writing at the moment is I went to Bulgaria to film this thing, and for like 7 weeks I was just in Eastern Europe, which was like really changed my life, basically, seeing how they live. And it's basically like going travelling. I never went travelling, and so to like learn the different culture and sort of settle in. And so I just came home really sort of passionate about writing about that, and I don't really feel like I've been searching for it because it's just the stuff that I was really interested in anyway. Whereas before, when I was, you know, starting doing comedy, I was like that. I was just like, oh, what funny thing has ever happened? And or what if a man fell over? And, you know, just trying to pull it up. But actually, I think the best stuff, I mean, not that I know anything about comedy yet, but it just seems to be the stuff you're actually interested in just comes out of you. I know Bulgaria was like a big moment in my life. So I feel like, you know, it's coming from in and going out as opposed to looking out and trying to, you know.
Yeah, I know very little about that country.
Well, nobody does, which is what I'm hoping to sort of mine in my show, really. It's, I don't want to sort of do all the jokes about it, but
it's encouraging that you said jokes plural as well.
There are at least three joke about Bulgaria. It was a bit scary initially because it's like, it's kind of horrible and like all falling down and everyone looks really sad. Everyone seems really sad all the time in Bulgaria. As Western people, you can just stick out. And there's a lot of anti-Western sentiment as well because they're like, you know, ex or whatever Soviet, and there's anti-Western propaganda and they don't really like us because we're just obviously different. We like moisturize and buy things and smile and they can just sense that we're different. And like a guy shouted at me and I got some abuse in the street. He's just like, fuck off, foreigners, in perfect English. Like it's translated his hatred for me. Like seeing it from their perspective, like when we're, you know, I've got loads of Bulgarian friends now and us, and you look at us and you do think actually we are really over expressive and like we're silly in that, like, oh, did you get that, you know, jumper you're looking for? I did. Like, what, you know, why are you putting such a big face for a jumper? It's pointless. Whereas they're just all like, yes, all the time. And so, like, and they don't say thank you as well. It's another thing that had to, this is basically now the jokes, but like, you have to get into the mindset. So when they do something for you, they just do it and then you just move on. You don't say thanks.
Linger over the act.
But it's really hard for English people to get their head around that. But actually, like, saying thanks is a weird thing. Like, why you have to do that? You know, you are thankful, but you don't have to say thanks. So when you say no thank you, right, they perceive you as, like,
wanting the thing and just being polite. So they keep offering it to you. And anyway, it's just like culturally. So we're like, you know, these Victorians who are all like, you know, used and set in our ways. And to go over there, and I just constantly thought they were really rude and horrible and hated me. But then you settle in and actually they're all your friends. They just express it in a really different way. And it was just fascinating, basically. And, you know.
Yeah. It's funny you should say that, because I've got a lot of friends who've been to Bulgaria and they all had a great experience. Lots of please and thank yous.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Something that maybe did just hate you. I mean, that might have been... Ever considered that, Tom?
No, I am extremely popular across the world.
Yeah. I imagine, you know, you've had to overcome the obvious conundrum of getting away from all the other shows that are focused on Bulgaria.
Oh, there's a lot of Bulgaria comedy out there.
Yeah, all that material.
I know. I've seen, obviously you've seen, you know, the big Bulgaria shows over the Edinburgh. Tim Key did Bulgaria. Yeah. I think Milton Jones, of course, did Bulg.
Battle of the Bulg.
Yeah, exactly. Battle of the Bulg. That would be good. I should have said that. No, well done.
Does Uncle Bulgaria from the Wombles make any appearance?
No, there is no Uncle Bulgaria. I don't know.
But
Uncle
I can see
Bulgaria.
You furiously now scribbling that down, Tom, on your notes.
Stop making things up just because it's a radio. You can't be like, oh, I can see you masturbating. Like, you can't just do that.
Tom, don't say that. People.
The webcam. It's on the webcam.
No, that's the great thing about the audio medium, Tom. We can say whatever we want.
They can imagine us doing anything.
Yeah.
Thinking, wow.
Exactly. We could stop touching each other. People wouldn't know.
Surfing right now. It's wicked.
Yeah, it's brilliant how the technology's evolved to cut out all the wave noises.
Very clever.
Yeah, very clever. We're actually in...
Whoa, that's a big one. You see that? That was great.
Yeah.
Oh, cowabunga. Oh.
Have you ever been surfing?
Loads, mate. They say
that's
cowabunga.
That's a big one, cowabunga.
Well, you haven't been surfing. Look at the way you surf. You're surfing like an idiot, mate. I'm a pro here.
Yeah,
I'm nailing it.
I'm on my feet and everything.
I've done an 8.20. Yeah. That's like four goes round, isn't it?
Yeah.
Another bit.
Yeah, and a half.
Surfing and geometry.
Yeah, dude, gnarly.
That's a gnarly set square.
The gnarliest of the... So, well, Tom, it's been lovely to have a chat with you.
Oh, thanks.
I think we've touched on all the subjects that I had written down on my piece of paper.
Yeah.
The other thing that we should... people would know you from Friday Night Dinner. Is that coming back for any more helpings?
I cannot confirm. I neither confirm nor deny.
Right.
I think, yeah, it's like... Israel always say, don't they? When something really bad happens. like you know, when that shark was in... Went to Egypt and ate some Egyptians and Israel.
Was that sent by Israel?
Well, they neither confirm nor deny it. Basically. So, not, I don't know. I'm not comparing Israel foreign policy to Channel 4. But
commissioning process, yeah, but...
I neither confirm nor deny. Right. That's what I need to have, get a more official stance. Although that is probably the most official of stances, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I think
no comment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No comment. So I just end this really nice interview on a horrible, just like, no, go away.
No, it's great. But I think lots of people enjoy that show and I think are hoping for a return.
Well, I am. Fingers crossed. Yeah, I like it. I get money for it as well, you know. It's
yeah, there's an accountant licking his lips as we speak. Agent Circling, but yeah, it's a great show, and written by Robert Popper, of course, who is a fantastic for someone. I grew up reading his. I say grew up when I was a sort of late teen, early 20s, reading the Time Waster letters. Which, if you haven't checked out, listeners, do track down because they're absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, well, I can. He keeps doing them, so
Can,
you know. Maybe so. Hopefully, we might, us fans, might get another one of those sometime because he just does it for fun. And I do get to see some of that. He is mental. He's brilliant. And hopefully, you'll get another one of those books because I love that as well. It's brilliant. Yeah. So
brilliant. Well, they're a tiny little exclusive there.
Precisely.
Tom at the end. Well, thanks, Tom, for coming in and joining us. Good luck with the work in progress. I hope you live to see it through.
Thank you. So do I.
Thanks, Tom. Now here's Tony Law in a lucky voice, obviously. Hello, hello. Today we're joined by Mr. Tony Law.
Always good to see you, sir.
Hello, Tony. And today, well, I mean, this is part of our Leicester coverage. Tony, you've already done your Leicester show, so it's kind of a little bit of a weird thing to start off by saying, but we're in a lucky voice, which is one of those karaoke joints. Yeah. They've been incredibly hospitable to us. We've literally just turned up without telling them we were coming. You just sweet-talked us in.
Well, that's because we went to my local cafe where I do my writing. I've just done quote signs. Where I sit and read and be away from the children. So I sit over there. But then what happened was we realized it was too solemn, wasn't it? So we went and I decided we're going to try and get into Lucky Voice which I've been watching out of my window and complaining to the authorities about for years about how loud it is. And now we're in. We're in the inner sanctum. I mean, they just think I'm a tramp walking by, so who am I to say? But I still have the powers of judgeability, right?
Yeah, I think using words like judgeability allows you to be judgeable.
I've been reading a lot of Stalin lately, so I say things like kulak to people who cut me off, and I think, well, you're a middle manager, you kulak.
Doing a lot of chatting about your five-year plans.
Yeah, and the terror.
Yeah, the purges, they always help.
I know, if I read too much Stalin, it's not just about Stalin, it's about the whole Politburo and the whole... You know, I don't know, you get very killy. You know? You start setting out plans of who you need to be murdered and in what order. I've got loads of lists of people I need killed. And what I've learned from Stalin and those guys is often they're your best friends. And it's important to kill them first. So it's people that you respect and admire that you hold close. You think, one day they will turn against me and I will lose their love and I need to kill them right away.
That's it. Preempt their loss of faith. Yeah. I think any sentence that begins, one thing I've learned from Stalin, is one that some people would treat with caution, but I'm glad to learn from what you have picked up, Tony, and also from someone who is now an esteemed member of the relatively small group of comedians who have received an Edinburgh Comedy Award nomination. That's pretty exciting.
Well, I would go back in time and start killing some of them, I think.
Yeah, if only you've had that sort of malice aforethought back then.
I'm like Stalin, I'm a late bloomer. It took him a lot, like he didn't come into power till he was a lot older, you know. He was no Hitler. He was no youngster.
Yeah, Hitler's the Jack Whitehall of the genocidal maniac world.
Very similarly to Stalin, I prefer working with younger comics. So like he was always purging the people that were close to him and from his generation, going, we need new blood. We need new blood. We are old Bolsheviks now. Apart from him, we needed new blood. So he was culling like Kamenev and all the old Leninists. He got rid of all those guys, the Trotskyites, obviously. And I'm like that too. I prefer to do my work with people that are a generation younger.
Yeah, more impressionable.
So I'd say Luke Roberts for me is like I would say he's my Yezhov. Who's the poisonous dwarf who went on to utterly destroy millions of people's lives. So I'm not saying John Luke Roberts is exactly the same as that, but he is that to me.
Yeah.
And I'll eventually have to kill Luke, but not for a few years yet. Stuart Lee, he needs to be taken off.
He's a competitor, isn't he? He's of a certain age.
He's no competitor. He's too big and he's got too many of the wrong ideals.
Yeah.
He embodies the party too much, and I think he needs to be removed.
He's got a dogma which some people are starting to get a hold of.
He's well used to death threats anyway on the internet, isn't he? So he might as well just do it.
Yeah. No, it's fair. I mean, it's starting to sound a bit Game of Thronesy.
Murray I might keep alive in the way that I kept, you know, Kalanin.
As a sex slave or something like that?
No, as president. Like, he'd be president, but he has no actual powers.
Ah, right. Like all the best presidents. So we referenced Leicester earlier.
Yeah, three shows. It's great.
Yeah?
Brilliant.
You enjoyed the good people of Leicester welcomed you Russian arms.
Yeah, no, wonderful. And honestly, like, great. Two perfect shows. I didn't like the second one as much as the first one because it was on at 9:30. I like to get it all done early.
Well, here's the thing. Last time we spoke, Tony, it was pre-Edinburgh, and you were extolling the virtues of having a noon 30, a 12:30 show, where you could wheedle out the, I think you called them knob ends in the audience. It's a technical term, knob ends who would otherwise come to a later showing and ruin your riffing.
Yeah, and when I got into it, it became like a thing I got into, So it's 3 years in a row I did noon or around noon. And I was the guy who went on early. And then when I started getting a crowd, I started feeling really cocky and proud of it. And then so I said to Tommy this year, he says, when do you want to go on? I went, obviously, I want to go on first noon. But guess what? I'm going on at 12:30 again this year, but there's an act on before me. Bridget Christie's only gone, oh, I'm going to go at 11. I'm like, what?
And here's
that's
the
my
rub.
Spot.
Here's rub. Stuart Lee's wife. It's just another way of him getting one up on you.
Oh, man, that is so sexist.
Yeah, The fact that Stuart Lee would control his wife's touring schedule,
No, I think they probably just need to get, like, childcare. Yeah, so 11 is a sensible thing. They're just they've spotted a really clever idea that I've already done, which is if you want to get your, you know, get a babysitter, you get it around noon, and then boom, you're back on the game.
Not the game.
Well, it's a game.
Yeah, just not the selling yourself as ex game.
Yeah, no, so it means you're back into the parenting sphere. Mm. That was the whole idea. Actually, it wasn't. It wasn't that idea at all, but it became that.
Retrospectively, that's what you justified it as. Yeah. Here's the thing. I've had a little idea, a little brainwave for your childcare issues in Edinburgh.
Put them in the show.
Well, why not charge them to come in? You've got them looked after for the show. You're getting a bit of money for that. Yeah. You know, you're not losing out, Tony.
I try that, but they just keep going on stage. I can't let them anywhere near my show because they're always on. Because every time we go to a festival... Every time we go to a festival, the little fuckers get on stage. Like, Latitude, my wife was holding both their hands, they were both pulling, and there's like 5,000 people out there. And my wife's going, she just didn't know what to do. She just got fed up and let go of them. And she thought, well, let's see how this pans out. Because they've been on stage before, like End of the Road and stuff, and they sang Row, Row, Row You About, stormed it.
Hang on.
Mark Olver, the compere, was trying to block them. Some of the stagehands trying to block them. They're only 3.5 at this point. But they're sort of like, nobody wants to really grab them because they'll, you know, they'll be troubled probably.
Yeah.
And I'm on stage. And then all of a sudden I hear the crowd sort of changes and their focus shifts. And I'm like, hang on, that bit was good. Why? And I look behind me and then these two little kids are wandering out. Give them the microphone. Ripped it up.
Yeah. They had a tight five that just had to get out.
They just nailed it. Observational stuff.
Yeah.
Dadsy, when I was on the bus... And, oh, yeah. That's how easy it is, just noticing shit.
Yeah. When you first started telling that story, I assumed that your wife would be stood at the back of the tent with your kids, and then it was some kind weird stage dive thing where they literally went crowd surfed across 5,000 people just to get up there.
That's the way we'll play it next time, because it'll take them as long as it'll take me to do the set for them to get there. But backstage, they're just straight up the ramp. And they really ripped that up.
Tony, isn't it a little horrifying, though, that you've raised these stage divas already at the young, tender age of...
Well, I think psychologically, though, I think what'll happen is they'll be bored of it. They'll never crave it, so they're just going to think... They're going to just dismiss it and look down at it and just go, oh, Daddy's doing his silly little job. Poor old Daddy. And they'll be down at the library or whatever they're doing. Or horrifically, maybe one of them will work in the city or something. And really loves cars. Hey, Dad, I bought you a car.
Yeah.
You know Father can't drive. Dad, we're talking about mortgages. Me and Mitzi, we've bought a house. And I don't understand you. My son has become a kulak.
Well, there could be that. It could be a lot worse, a hell of a lot worse.
Oh, I think that is as bad as it can get. I just look at him and just stare at him like this. I'll be wearing the same coat.
It could be far worse than them being on stage, that they could become that. I would have thought you would have recruited them into the family trade, the Russian Stalinist reenactors.
I hope so. I hope I make them into communists. I was never a good one. But I don't know. They're very funny. They're a lot funnier than me. I just steal their material now. That's what I'm generating. But I think they'll get tired of it.
Yeah. I think they'll get bored. The joke theft.
Oh, no. I just think they'll get tired of going on stage. I think that maybe is the thing. Just keep pushing them on. You know?
Yeah. Only takes...
Luke Roberts actually said that your kids have been on stage with you 3 times now, and each time they've done it really well. They must think your job's really, really easy. Because they do. They just walk on, and it goes well. And they must just think, well, this is the easiest thing in the world. Why bother doing that again? God, Daddy doesn't actually do anything at all.
There's only 2 explanations for that,
Daddy,
Tony.
Why don't you open with row, row, row your boat? I mean, that's what we did, and it worked. It's like, you don't even have a job... What do you do, Daddy?
So, either you're a great teacher, or it is the easiest job in the world.
I think it's the easiest job in the world. Well, it is when your own like-minded people come, then it definitely is. You can just walk on there and just go, hey, we're all the same. Here comes some talk. Yeah. I like that. But it was those fucking 10 years down the bottom of the mine at the big mainstream comedy clubs where you're trying to convince people who've never seen you in their life. Those are hard times.
Yeah. I imagine dark also times. Difficult being booked to play in mines as well. It's
a deep, dark mine. But I'm thankful for those years, though, because it taught me to as many times as I died in my hole, it did teach me urgency. You know, if I was doing surreal, or I don't know, I don't even call it surreal, but whatever nonsense I do, it'd be easy to just waffle around if I'd been playing entirely to people who wanted that. But those places taught you to go, get a fucking laugh, get a joke, get a laugh, somehow. Not even a joke, just get a laugh somehow. Quickly, like urgency, or you're going to get booed and shouted at. Ha, 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 ha. Keeps you like hot on your toes. You got to keep it funny somehow. Even though they might just go, I think this guy's terrible, he's done nonsense. Oh, but that was a funny thing he did with his elbow. Like, because you can do, if you do your own crowd long enough, just chill out and waffle, man. And space and like squirrels and stuff.
And the other thing that I wanted to point out, Tony, is that Leicester Comedy Festival is drawing to a close now, which is sad because we will see the removal of your face from Leicester train station.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome. I didn't even realise that until I arrived. And I literally probably used that wrong, but I actually just walked out and went, that guy looks familiar. I was that dazed after my post-Market Harbor nap. I know that guy. Oh, no, it's me.
I imagine that's how you think all train stations should be.
What do I do now? They better be.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, just take over this country with the communist revolution. You've got your wish.
I'm sneaking my way in.
Well, with those words of insight, and if you fancy joining Tony in his quest to become the next socialist leader of this country in a glorious coup, then check out his website.
Well, I wouldn't know. I haven't seen my website for 3 years, but I know it's up there, and I'm sure it's there, but I think the photos are all wrong. Don't go to my... No, Twitter. I do Twitter to tell people where I'm at. Oh, what's the other... Oh, I'm doing the alternative comedy experience. Tonight or last night for 4 weeks. Mm. That'll be good. And Soho Theatre the next 2 weeks.
Amazing. And this is the tour that was Edinburgh nominated as well. So
Yeah.
It's worth going to see.
Shit compared to next year's show that I've got cooking up. I'm embarrassed to do this one.
Yeah. Well, this is it. You need parameters. You need to know what's bad in order to experience good.
Yeah.
So if you're Tony's musing now. If you're excited to experience any of that, do go see Tony. You know, live at a gig or just, well, we know he lives in Highbury now, so just hang around. He's here. Yeah. In the meantime, thanks for coming in, Tony.
Oh, thanks for coming. cheers. Thank you very much.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. Specifically, the curtain in my hotel room, which has now been drawn for the last time over this Leicester Festival. Yes, the place that brought us a king has certainly seen some new comedy princes emerge. We hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have. This is the last of our Leicester Comedy Festival specials. We are back on Friday for another special with Alexander Armstrong, who introduces his new Big Ask series. Believe me, it's a cracking interview, so do tune in for that. In the meantime, you can find us on iTunes, on Twitter at @John_Dave and me at Ben Shires. Google us, do whatever it is you do on the internet. That's none of my business. But until then, doodles. The Dave Weekly is a Pixiu production for Dave, hosted by me, Ben Shires, and produced by Joel Porter.